It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Okay, welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Good morning, everybody out there and on the East Coast, and you know, and all the little hiding places that people hide out. Beautiful day here in Hawaii, and as always, it's like a broken record. Why say it? You just wake up here, you should be excited. So, beautiful place. And we got many things to talk about, but I have on the line actually waiting is members from a community in North Carolina that I wanted to share with you. They have the similar problems where how the government or entities can take actions and impact you without knowing that they're impacting you, or maybe they know but just don't care. We don't know what the reason is, but this involves a transportation, public transportation, having access to buses that goes to certain areas where they've eliminated bus routes in certain areas. Does that sound familiar? And this is these communities that these bus routes are cut actually are important to the economy or to the well-being of the people that live in those communities. They have no cars. They rely on city transportation. So anyway, I have a couple of them calling actually from North Carolina. Now they had a small a protest. There's no small protest. A protest, a sign waving to bring attention to the city officials and to others of their plight. So I'm going to go in, and we've got so many things to talk about. We're going to talk about public participation in a polarized era, just briefly, because next week we'll talk more extensively about it and preparing. I did invite someone to call in, it's a couple of people, but forgive me if we don't address those issues today, but I assure you next week we will be on it. There's so much to talk about, and we'll talk some about it this morning, but let's go to the North Carolina people. Good morning, caller. Thank you for calling. How are you? You there? Hello?
Hello?
Good morning, caller. How are you?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm fine. Who am I speaking with?
My name is Crystal, Ned.
Okay. Hi, Crystal. How are you? And you're calling from where?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Uh-huh. I understand you had a sign-waving effort there. What is
yes,
actually
sir,
going
right.
on? Can you give us a little background as to what you hope to seek and what is the problem?
Well, from my understanding, I just moved here to Charlotte a couple years ago, and in the area which I stay in, which is a predominant black neighborhood, there's a bus that never runs on Sunday, and it's the 204.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit of concern because, like myself, I have three children and I have an elderly mother. And the 204 is needed because on Sundays you can't attend church. Just doing the things that you basically do every day, have to go out to a store. That's not, we can't do that because of the fact the bus does not run on the side which we live on, which is a predominant black neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to cross a busy highway, which is Brookshire, to catch the number one bus when every other bus runs on Sunday except for the 204.
Mm-hmm. And that 204 is in your area, your district. How many people does this area that you talk about approximately that are impacted?
At least a couple hundred,
mm-hmm.
say, over there in that area. Like I say, everyone over there is basically... like I say, it's a lot of elderly people there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of veterans there as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of children in that area. Like I said, it's predominantly black, low income,
mm-hmm.
which I don't understand it because the it's actually supposed to it's funded by the federal for low income families. So for it not to be running on a Sunday, it puts everybody in a bind that does have someone to go or does like to attend church because they can't get there because there's no bus.
So through the week, you're actually receiving bus service on 204 actually serves that area. But on weekend day, does it also shut down on Saturday or just Sunday?
It just really shut down on Sunday. Saturday, it stopped pretty early itself, too, as well. But Sunday, they do not run at all, and it's kind of, it's a messed up situation, like
mm-hmm.
I said, for those that, you know, unfortunately don't have transportation, like myself and other families mm-hmm. around the area, as well as elderly people that does like to attend church.
So it's vital that you have this bus service like any other citizen, correct?
Yes.
It's the lifeblood of you to get to the stores or that day you have to then find some other way of getting around. I'm sure that's costly by taxi cab and many of them are fixed
that is
income.
Totally correct.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think it happened that way? Do you attribute to poor planning or just they overlooked it or there's something more sinister that this is a black community and we can just ignore them and the hardship that they encounter is it's their own problem? What do you think about that?
Because of the area that I stay in, I would say it's more so of it's a predominant black neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's other things in that area that also need to be worked out too, as mm-hmm. well by it being in a black neighborhood. They pretty much overlook it,
mm-hmm.
and that's just my own personal opinion because mm-hmm. of the fact it's a low income black neighborhood.
Economic justice issue sounds like that is presenting itself in the obvious form.
Yes, absolutely correct.
And so this bus, normally on a weekday, not the weekend, you say Saturday, they shut it down, or shorten the hours of service. But what about the weekday? Can you give us an idea of when the service route of 204, when it serves from what time to what time on weekday?
The weekday, I think the first bus comes in roughly around about 5:20-ish.
A.M.?
And, yes, A.M., mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. correct. And it runs pretty good during the weekday.
Mm-hmm.
It runs real good during the weekday. It's just the Sunday, which, like I say, it's like you have to do everything Monday through Saturday, and then even on Saturday, the bus stops early. So for those that do work all day, they don't really have time to go out and do certain things Monday through Saturday. So Sunday is more like, okay, I can get out, go to the grocery store if I need to go to the grocery store. I may have to go to the pharmacy for my mother. She's
right.
elderly. Or I might have to go and just want to take my kids out
mm-hmm.
to the park or something mm-hmm. on a Sunday because I work Monday through Friday. Saturday I go to school. So I'm kind of busy from Monday through Saturday, and Sunday is my only free day, and I can't enjoy myself or my children taking them out because we have no transportation in order mm-hmm. to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it can be pretty expensive taking buses, taking cabs and Uber. Or we have a volunteer, her name is Yolanda Reed, that usually go around in the area because of the fact that there's no buses that kind of help the elderly and myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of took up the slack on Cass end, and she doesn't even work for Cass. This is her own transportation that she, and you know the wear and tear on the vehicle, but she's doing it mm-hmm. in spite of the injustice that's going on right now.
I see. And so there's a bigger problem here in that this community is low income, not that it is a gauging of the quality of the people, but it's a low income, and many of the jobs are accessible through the week. And they're making $7 an hour, I'm going to say, a minimum wages.
That's correct.
And so they make that money, and then on Sundays, if they want to go somewhere, they have to spend it, half of it, in taxi services or finding someone else to pay to transport them to or from wherever they have to go to shop. It's so critical, I would assume, because if you're working through the week, you don't have the time to shop. And you don't have the time to attend to the other little things. And Sunday, you might have a chance to shop, but now you have no transportation.
Yes, that's correct.
And so,
that's totally correct.
Who are you appealing to get this? The mayor, and how receptive are they, or the bus company, or any explanations?
As far as right now, I know we're communicating with the newscasters and Cats as well.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Tina mm-hmm. is she's an activist
mm-hmm.
that actually put this together. And she was the one that actually put it together.
Mm-hmm.
She did a couple signs, and me and a couple ladies, Miss Joyce. she was the one that was handling the petition, having stopping vehicles over the road, having them sign the vehicles, which we have a lot of signatures.
Mm-hmm.
So it turned out to be real. It turned out to be pretty good. We just hope that it affects or make a difference. Because, like I said, we had numerous of people actually sign the petition as well.
Mm-hmm. And there's Miss, what's her name? You mentioned there. Is there someone else there? And I'm going to speak with Tina shortly. But
yes, Miss Reed.
Yes, Miss Reed. Can you put her on and let's hear from her? But thank you for your time, and I hope it works out. And if you get any new developments or need some airtime, give us a call, and we can then email them the link, and they can hear that you're reaching out and crying out. But isn't it amazing? I'm from Mississippi originally, and I'm 65 years old, and the same old behavior that was back then is prevalent now.
It's amazing. You're in Hawaii, and we're all the way in Charlotte and having somewhat similar, the same issue.
It's social economic injustice.
Yes. Right.
It's not unique, and I want to seize this opportunity to say to those that are listening in other pockets of the world, if you think you're immune to this and you think it's just happening to the people in North Carolina or in Hawaii, you better wake up. This so-called globalization and, you know, $200 million salaries for people in high places does not address the real human issues that we are facing here. So,
I'm sorry, but it's also kind of weird that Miss Tina was telling me earlier how when you're over there by Tryon, some of the people that gets on with the badge, with an airport badge on North Lake Mall, they actually get on free. But you're talking about the pilots, the people that actually that can afford to pay for the bus. They're actually the ones that are allowed to get on free. So it's kind of it's a division, like you said, it's a division of economic.
So the people that have salaries and good jobs, they get to ride the bus for free, you're saying?
Yes.
And in turn, the people that have little or no money, not only do they not get to ride for free, they don't get to ride on certain days because the bus service is not available to them.
Exactly.
So I can imagine on a person that works through the week and on minimum wages and may get a second job, which is a natural, and go and work on a Sunday, but that's taken out of the play because there's no transportation for that person.
Yes, that's correct.
So it adds to the struggle that it already exists in this game of we call life.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to say before you go and then put Miss Reed on and we'll get her comments?
Well, no. Just thank you for having me on.
Okay.
God bless you guys.
Thank you. And we hope you luck there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, good morning or good afternoon for you there. We just woke up here in Hawaii. But how are you today?
I'm doing fine.
And I understand you're out there waving signs or getting the attention of others, appealing to them to fix the bus system. How is it impacting you? Would you like to share that with us?
Well, technically, I mean, it's not really impacting me because the people who's not able to get because of the bus service on Sunday, I go around and ask people, do they need the ride to get to grocery stores and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm taking Miss Crystal Ned to the store as we speak it. But at the same time, it's not only, like, I do it for everybody. I'm a, you know, nice person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really wear and tear in my car because only I try to do the elderly people and the kids. And, make sure they get from point A to point B because at the same time, crossing Brookshire Boulevard is dangerous because it's a highway because my son's father got hit by a car 2 years ago.
Mm. Sorry to hear that.
He died on Brookshire, and it's very dangerous for anybody. I mean, anybody.
And so this is a major thoroughfare, and you having to cross it, or the seniors having to cross it, to try and get to and from a store to buy groceries or whatever.
Right. See, in order to catch the bus one, you have to cross four lanes just to get on the other side.
And they have no shuttle,
each side.
No shuttle bus or any smaller van to accommodate this community, or no gesture such as that?
No.
Mm.
No shuttle bus or nothing.
Well, I must share with you, I'm sitting here feeling very melancholy, really sad, because people like you played a role. There's one in every community. We don't know that. We think that many of us are evil and fighting, scratching, but they don't understand the angels that do exist in these communities like yourself. And I applaud you for that. And it has been the life string of black communities for a long, 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 long time, when the system ignores us. And so I appreciate what you're doing, because I've been in that predicament, and as well have been a beneficiary of the same behavior that you're displaying, helping people, taking upon yourself to transport people. It's a reality, and people don't know that exists in our communities, and so we are humane, aren't we?
Right.
So I thank you, and just it's kind of a sad reminder. I would like to hear that we've come a long way, and it seems that we get left out for whatever it is. Which brings me to the next point: how do we get involved? What is the participation in politics there in these communities? Do they have neighborhood boards or community boards, or that community?
That's a good question, and which the answer will be is that when they have, like, when we complained about the 204 on Sundays, they claiming, quote-unquote, that it was announced on the news about council meetings for the bus 204. I watch Channel 9, I watch 46, I watch all the news. Not one single news said anything about council meetings for the 204.
Mm-hmm.
The only ride I talked to a supervisor from CAT, and he stated the only why the 204 don't run on Sunday is because it's not enough passengers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're not running it.
So it's not enough passengers.
It's not enough passengers to ride the 204.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told him before, the bus ends at North Tryon at the library. And the other end is Central, between Kentucky and Tennessee. Central is the last bus stop on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But like I told him, everybody works Monday through Saturday. Sunday, you got people trying to get to the laundromat, trying to get to the grocery store, might trying to want to go up to Bayford Road and walk around, you know, to catch another bus. Then all the other buses can run Monday through Sunday, so can the 204.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got elderly people that can't get to the bus, can't get to bus number one.
Mm-hmm.
So me step in and take them where they need to go.
And how many people, if you would just share with us, how many people are you actually transporting in any given month? Would you?
Through the month, I could say about 10, 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes during the weekday I do it too.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, some 204 don't be on time.
Right.
That's number one. Number two, they break down or don't let the customers know that they broke down, and then they wonder why is the bus an hour late?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the bus broke down. Oh, it's a fine time to tell somebody, which y'all have a CAT supervisor driving around. If he could drive around to make sure the buses get there on time, he could drive around and let the customers know that the bus is broke down.
Or put another bus.
Another bus.
And put another bus in the system to have it to pick up where the breakdown starts.
They don't tell us.
Mm-hmm.
And second shift after, there's no bus late enough. Like, okay, the bus runs from Monday through Friday from 5:30 in the morning it starts. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's 5:30. 5:30 in the morning, and the bus, the last bus is about, I'll say 11:30.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so when you
10:30,
take
I'm sorry.
10:30, so you're really just basically being dismissed as a community, not just as individuals, but as a community as a whole, correct? And
correct.
What do you think causes this, or how do you, what would encourage the government people, the responsible parties, to behave this way? What are you attributed to?
I can't really tell you offhand, but in my state of mind, mm-hmm. and the way I'm thinking, like, they don't care about us.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. Really tell the truth, they really don't. Because you sitting here, y'all talking about y'all, oh, but y'all coming out with brand new buses.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new buses. And then you want to upraise the fare up and expect people, us black community, don't have that kind of money. Paying to get on the bus. When senior citizens get on the bus, they got their Medicare card, they pay a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
But the other ones, they have to pay this amount just to catch the bus. And then they want extra money for a transfer. To me, an elderly person needs to get somewhere from point A to point B. I tell them, man, don't catch the bus. Get in the car. I'll take you where you need to go.
Mm-hmm. And
because at the end of the day, you can get there quicker than sitting there trying to wait for another bus just to get to a point.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got some buses that don't go that far out to their appointment. They got to get out off the bus and go on. And it might be too long for them.
I see. And all because of this community, and it's predominantly black, is that correct?
Yes, it's mixed.
Yeah, it's mixed. You know, so, but low
income. Majority black
and low income.
Right.
So it could be others, people of, not people of color, but other people, whites and Mexican or Mexican Americans or Latinos and what have you. And so this community, it sounds like they just severed the responsibility. Come Saturday evening, you're on your own. You're left to your own devices.
Exactly. And then also, let me add this to it. They have another transportation, which, you know, for the elderly to get to their appointments or get to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
But what really upsets me was the one lady, she said, I got to get to the grocery store. I said, well, call the cat's transportation, not the bus, the transportation,
mm-hmm.
where they pick up the old people. She's old. Well, they won't let me use it because I don't have the Medicaid card. I have the Medicare card. And the people who have Medicaid card, they can use that to get to the store or get to the doctor's appointment. Because she got Medicare, she only can use it to go to the doctor's appointment. She can't use it to go to the grocery store. That's what I don't understand about that.
And that bus is passing by.
And it's all federal funding.
And it this bus goes and pick up someone with a Medicare card or whatever. And
they take her to her doctor's appointment. But if she needs to go from the doctor's appointment to the grocery, they'll take her back home because she don't have Medicaid.
Really?
The other ones who have Medicaid, they can go to the grocery store, they can get dropped off and get picked back up an hour later. They can go to the doctor's appointment, get picked up back up from the doctor's appointment an hour later, and then go home.
So they actually pick her up. They will pick her up to take her to the doctor, but they won't. In that same route or that same trip, they won't let her stop at the grocery store. They'll take her back home because she does not have a certain card?
Exactly.
Wow.
That's what I said. And she was sitting there at the bus stop crying, and I said, man, what's wrong? And she told me her story, and I said, you know what? I opened the door. Get in. I'll take you to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And she offered me money. I told her, no, you're... Not to be disrespectful to you, but you're elderly, and I don't take money from elderly people.
This is, and you know, I got to stop here and say that, you know, for those that are listening, if you think this is just a a charade. There are people, and I'm one of those people, that believe in when the community come first, the elder come first, and we
right.
do things without charge because it's such an insult to our intelligence and our person and our being and our spirit that we're driven to have to take what others might think drastic measures or go to the extreme in doing, picking up elderly for free, taking them to the doctor, to the hospital, to the grocery stores or to the places that are essential in their life. And just believe it that it does happen. It is happening, and Ms. Reed here is an example of that. And if you want to get a picture of what a black community, a low-income community, how it functions, how it survived in this world of everybody trying to make lots of money, here you are, folks. You're listening to it right now. This is a perfect example. This is how they survive, even when the government ignores you. And I'm sure much of the bus funding is federally funded or subsidized to some degree federally.
Yes. But what's so funny about it, I mean, not funny, but for example, okay, I go in another community, like say, for instance, if it's snowing, okay, you go into every other community, they ain't got nothing on the street. No snow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come in our community, you got snow. They will not come and shovel that. But they'll shovel everybody else but ours. So when our cars slip and slide and get in an accident, here come the police and boom. It's our fault.
But now when you...
But the city won't help.
When you go and shop and purchase and you pay your water bill and all of that, there's a tax, and the taxes go to these city functions, correct? So
correct.
Why is it that one community gets service and they're taxed, and then your community don't get service, but you're still taxed, and when you do make it to the grocery store, you're paying taxes on what you purchase. And when you fill up with gas, you're paying gas tax and what have you. So why is that? Is it just because they're minorities or they're black or what? I mean,
the thing about it is because we're low-income housing people,
mm-hmm.
quote-unquote, we can't afford what they get.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to treat us like dirt.
But it's government, and
right.
so...
Exactly, but they're not, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we're paying our taxes, they don't care about us.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, we the ones suffering, not them.
And
they don't care... If we suffer.
And the people riding the bus.
If we starve, they're eating. So we got to watch them while we starve.
Right.
And
well,
right.
I definitely would like to offer the little time we have on air here to help you and give you a voice. If you want to, again, call in and talk about it or give us an update or need some assistance or whatever, please give us a call, and I'm going to put on my Facebook and the website, get more specific information, I think, a GoFundMe or something to support this or support the effort and being able to, because you're busy working, and that community is busy working, or elderly are unable to go to the public meetings, per se, to speak out, to raise these issues. And so individually, when you call, you're being... put aside.
Exactly. And also, I even pick up a Spanish woman that she walks from McDonald's in the morning because she has to be at work at 6 in the morning. So she walked from Central Tennessee all the way to Batesford Road to McDonald's. So one evening, me and Tina was hanging out at McDonald's. We end up getting something to eat. And I asked her, and Miss Tina was telling me she lived around the neighborhood. So I asked her, you know, because she don't speak English that well.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her, did she need a ride home from work? And she said, yes. So I picked her up one Sunday. There's a Spanish lady that works at McDonald's. And I picked her up and brought her back home. Because mm-hmm. she got to work at 4 o'clock, and we went back up to get her.
Mm. And it's dangerous if you work a job at nighttime. What time does a bus shut off at night coming through there?
Okay, on Monday through Fridays is 10:30. And Saturdays is about, I'll say no later than 8.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes every hour on a Saturday. But if you go, starting at 7:30 on Saturday, but if you go downtown on Saturday at the transportation center, some buses run every hour, sometimes run every 30 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and it's federal funding. But we're not getting no assistance mm-hmm. with the 204. And they need that. If you can run 7 days a week with the other buses, you need to run 7 days a week with the 204.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you could, I'd ask if you folks could get me a contact information for the mayor's office and the bus management. We'd like to write them a letter and see what changes we can bring or suggest to them that this is not good for the southern hospitality.
Right. Yeah. I can get this to you.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I appreciate it, Mr. Reed.
Can mm-hmm. I say one more thing?
Yeah, you can say more than one thing. Help yourself. Go ahead.
Tell my sister, Contessa Queen, I said hello. She's in Hawaii with you.
And who is that again, her first
my
name?
My sister, Contessa Queen.
Flint?
Contessa Quinn.
Quinn.
Contessa Quinn.
Q-U-I-N-N?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Contessa Quinn.
Yes, that's my sister.
All righty.
Well, and her kids, Michael, Ariana, Kaylani. I don't know her baby's name. Her last child she just had. Well, hi, baby.
Okay, well, thank you. I hope they're listening, and thank you so much, Ms. Reed. And then is Tina there, Tina Cuisson?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Here go Miss Tina. All right.
Thank you.
Hello?
Well, you thought you were escaping injustices and how people of color and people of low income and people of different sexes of gender get treated. It's amplified in the South. So,
it really is, and it's just so unfortunate to see the families and the people that are impacted. That's why we did the rally.
Yeah, like I say, the South is a good place to be far from, not just from, but far from. And it's something that it's once it, you experience it, it's a stain that never, it's indelible. It's racism and injustice and economic racism, social injustice. And this is a perfect example. They complain that we're lazy, minorities and others are lazy and won't work. But then when we do want to work and not lazy, we can't get to work because it's double talk and it's a sad occasion. And unless we start to address it, those that have something, look over your shoulder and think about the other guy. Just think about the systemic and the institutional behavior that create these problems for people of color.
And it's really true. And like this morning, many of the people that wanted to be there at the protest were scrambling to find their way to work, whether it was walking 45 minutes from where we live up to Beatty's Ford or trying to run across Brookshire and then up to the railroad track at Chicago Ferry. So it really, in my neighbors, there are probably 10 families right in that block
mm-hmm.
with a household, the parent, either a mother or a father, who is putting themselves, their life in danger, trying just to get to work on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we really appreciate this, Carol.
And this is, and you've had both TV stations or two TV stations to cover you this morning? Or this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we had Fox 46 and also WBTV, and we appreciate they came out. Fox 46 also did a story, a precursor, Friday night, and spoke to a disabled veteran named Randy that actually was impacted because he couldn't get to work on Sunday, and he wasn't about to run across Brookshire, and so he was not able to keep that job. And for him, a lot of the veterans out there, they are through HIPVASH, the Veterans Affairs program of trying to be stabilized, previously homeless. So it's a game every little bit of trying to get back on your feet and moving forward when you're impacted and can't get your job. It means a lot.
Mm-hmm. So this is the 204, one bus line that you're asking for, or just one bus? That's the 204 on the LaSalle?
Yes.
And so I'm looking at this now. It services Kentucky Avenue, Oakview Terrace, Central Street, Tennessee Avenue. Is that 1885 I-85 service road? Is that the road you have to cross?
No, Brookshire, I-16, I believe.
Oh, okay, I see. And then there's Honeywood Avenue. Just given the areas is, and Betty Ford Road, that's the one she was saying, talked about earlier.
That takes 45 minutes to get out there if you walk it.
Beatty's Ford Road.
Seven.
Okay. So this is really an impact. I mean, it's like having your veins just stop pumping blood.
It basically, it's the city and government telling you when you can and can't go somewhere if you are relying on public transportation.
And that just means the death or the struggle is heaped up or intensified because now you have nothing already, basically. You're struggling to make ends meet. And then if you dare have an interest in going and getting a job at McDonald's or somewhere close around, you can't get there at certain times, and people want stability in their hiring. They don't want someone that can come, can't come, maybe can come, can't get a ride. They're looking for stability in their workforce, right?
Yes, absolutely. One of the parents I talked to last night when I was running the bus passing out flyers, she said that news doesn't believe her that there's no Sunday bus. And so I told her, well, go ahead and point them to the Fox 46 news story Friday night that tells you there's no Sunday bus where we live.
Mm-hmm. And so this also impacts you personally because I'm sure that's why you became familiar with it because you experienced that and certain jobs you had. You go from job plenty to not worth having a job because you're going to spend it all on bus transfers and tickets when you can take the bus.
Yeah. And then on Sunday, you're either going to call a taxi or an Uber in the middle of winter, or you're going to hike up Brookshire, which is going up a hill and across all those lanes, and it's really dangerous. And at some point, you just have to say, my health and the stress is not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I don't want to work. It's just I can't risk getting hit by a car to get to work because no one's going to pay my medical or take care of me when that happens. So it really does. And then if you have a lot of the jobs, especially at the airport, once you're there at 5 a.m., you just can't get there from where we are any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you finish a second shift at 10:30 at night, by the time you get uptown to the transit station and on a bus, there is no, you're missing the 204 already. You're going to walk in that 45 minutes, or you're going to have to get off on the number one and venture across that Brookshire. So it's really, unfortunately, a dead-end area without a bus service that works for people. And so whether you're the family struggling to do laundry on Sunday and get up to Betty Ford to the laundromat, it's not going to happen.
So
you're stuck.
So you either have to take off time on a weekday to go to the laundromat.
Correct.
Or
yes.
Just go dirty.
Yeah. Or go hungry because you may not be able to go get your groceries. And some people can't even get to the pharmacy, and that might be their day off if they need to go get their medications up at CVS on Baby Ford. So we have people that use walkers, canes, and like I said, families that it's quite a walk. It is. So we're just hoping that the mayor and the city, that they'll listen, and we're hoping that everyone joining with the petition signing and the rally this morning, that this will get some, hopefully make an impact and we get some results.
Well, I would like to follow up on the that one situation, especially where the lady can get on the bus with the, and I don't know if I have it right, Medicaid card, and go to the doctor on that van or that bus, shuttle bus, but they will not allow her to stop while she's out and about or transferred her to a grocery store. They'll take her back home. But if you had a Medicare card, and I want to make sure I got it right, so if I'm wrong, correct me. But a Medicare.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I will follow up and find out more.
But a Medicare
that.
Card, you can get on the bus, go to your doctor, and go shopping. Something's wrong.
I'm not familiar. I do know that veterans don't get a discount. So I've been told before, well, where's your red, white, and blue card? We'll give you a discount. The bus guy, and so I pull out my VA card, which is red, white, and blue, and they said, no, it's got to be a Medicaid card or Medicare card.
So it's all about this entire situation boils down to color. Color of the card, color of the people, color of what? The money? What is this?
It's real puzzling because as I just venturing to the airport and the workers there, the North Lake, which is an express bus, the pilot and the air crew and majority of people with an airport badge can ride the North Lake Express for free. And they even added route time, but if you're someone like in our area, there's not an adequate bus to get you there at 5 a.m. or to get you home after 10:30. So when I originally wrote the mayor in February and pointed these things out, they basically just said, well, Charlotte's not in charge of the airport. But Charlotte owns the airport, so they clearly are in charge. So it's a little bit baffling, and I'm learning all the time of the hardships of others. So I will follow up with the gal on how I think that she's probably talking about like a handy van, like what Honolulu has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you, Tina Quizon, and please keep us informed and give me that information. We'll see if we can write a letter and contact, and maybe I can try and interview the mayor or someone in higher up. But
and Crystal,
don't tell them.
Ananda are still trying to figure out how we can be on the radio here in North Carolina and in Hawaii.
Well, that's the joy of freedom and people respecting the rights of others. That's a product of hard work and demanding that your government and others adhere to it and provide us with the airtime and what have you. We pay for it, but still, yet it's probably in South Carolina, it is puzzling. But here, this is consistent, has the same stench as it is in Detroit, Lansing, Michigan, with their water. And all of these communities, such as that are low-income minority, they use us up when we're young and vibrant and build the economy, and then when you get old, you throw away society. And and so that's basically, where the senior citizens who have worked hard, and they may not have been coding and building computers, but the other mundane things that others didn't want to do while they could go and play with computers and raising other babies and feeding and cleaning and washing and picking up their trash and digging the ditches, now that infrastructure is in place and the people are older, so we have no use for them. It's just a practice that we see more frequent now, the throwaway society.
And it's just unfortunate because you're keeping a community fragile when it should be moving forward and sustainable, and yet you're almost being felt like you're being held prisoner in your own community.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you got no money and your skin is dark and you look different, it just seems to be something commonplace. And anybody that can't accept that as comments, I'm sorry, you need to listen to another station or another show But that's the way it is. Well, thank you, Tina. I appreciate you calling in and sharing this with us. And I'll wait for that information. And we'll post some of the things up on carolcox.com.
Well, thank you. And I know everybody that rallied together today appreciates that. All the way in Hawaii, they were able to share hopefully an impact we made. So
and
thank you.
People in Hawaii will learn that it's just their problems are similar to it. And so that, I mean, maybe it will offer some solutions. How can the same thing happen here happen there? Right?
Yes.
When it comes to government.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Tina.
Okay. Thank
Aloha.
You.
Bye. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hello, Carol. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
You have anything relevant to this subject?
Not really. I was just calling to say hello. I mean,
okay.
I know the 49ers.
Well, we'll punt that one on down the road, I appreciate you listening, but you're really not listening. It's for the last 11 years, it's been what the 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks and the whatever, the Houdinis and the Whodunits. So not being mean-spirited, it's just that people don't raise their kids the right way these days, you know. So unfortunately, that's what you have. So we'll be back in the next hour, and we'll be talking about the boat that's out there on the rocks at the reef. And we attended, and like I say, I did invite someone, and I misplaced the phone number, the cards. But if you're listening, we will be getting back with you, and we will be talking about a program that was a seminar, basically, that took place at the Law School, and public participation in a polarized era. And there's some very interesting things, and we're learning and to see how there is actually a concerted effort to dull the powers or hamper the powers of the people and their comments and their participation in government by using the services of consultants and what have you, and basically, it makes for an interesting conversation and quite revealing. Ray Soon was at this convention, at this conference, and had some very interesting comments, and there are many others had as well. But we really are anxious to talk about some of this, and then next week I will be playing some of the excerpts from that Mr. Soon, his comments about public participation and public disclosure and transparency, quite alarming. But we'll be talking about that and other things. So we'll be right back. This is the Carol Cox Show, carolcox.com or Carol Cox Facebook or the Carol Cox Show Facebook. We'll be back shortly.
KWAI. this world is in an uproar. People singing a song, the way these reds is cutting up. Ain't gonna be long, I might dig myself a hole. Move my baby down in the ground. You know when I come out, there won't be no walls around. Now they take me to the riverfront to cross the deep blue sea. My baby's wondering, man, what become of me? I might dig myself a cave, move my baby down in the ground. You know when I come out, there won't be no walls around. Well, now that's all right now, mama. That's all right for you. That's all right now, mama. Any way you do, I might dig myself a cave, move my baby down in the ground. You know when I come out, there won't be no walls around. You know I love my baby, and I want her for myself. If I go to war, she got to get somebody else. I might dig myself a cave, move my baby down in the ground. You know when I come out, there won't be no walls around.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning again, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. Again, you can pick us up at carolcox.com if you'd like to. You can also go back and podcast some of the earlier shows, I should say, all of those shows. And for you that there's talk radio ends in the evening or what have you, if you incline and want to, you can actually listen to it at any time of the day or night. So go back there. I think there's a, if you ask me, there's a treasure trove of good things about Hawaii and good shows that we've talked about and exposés. And so I would encourage you to, if you find yourself bored and looking for some good information and a little historical background on various issues in Hawaii, go to carolcox.com. We talk the truth, and that's what it's all about. I mean, we don't talk about space monkeys and things of that nature, and you know, and ghosts behind the kitchen sink and things of that nature, but we'll give you your money's worth because it's free. So, you know, the boat is out there sitting on the reef as we've come to expect. I'm going to miss it. Actually, it's such a beautiful sight. It stimulates you in thinking, well, if there were some pirates aboard that boat, what happened? Did the pirates run ashore or, you know, or what happened? I mean, it's intriguing. I spoke to some people last night, and you can see a bit of the video of them. They're pumping foam into the boat itself, the skeleton of the boat, and this is a Pacific Paradise. And last night, while I was down there, they had anticipated or suggested that they would be able to get rid of it yesterday. But somehow it's reported that as they were pumping fluid in it, foam in it, the wave hit it or something caused it to move, and they found water ran into the bow. And so therefore they had to cancel and fix that or address that. And they will tow it out when they do get it suitable for floating. This is information on the periphery that I got. It wasn't a formal statement, but I'm privy to certain information that suggesting that it would be towed out to one of two sites, possibly. One is off Campbell Industrial Park, and another is about 12 miles off Honolulu Harbor. In very deep water, they will let it go and then be employing some explosives to remove the foam. And I'm quite curious, but this isn't the first boat they've sank or anything like that. So, again, you know, you come back and you think, well, in this instance, will they be cleaning the boat and getting it environmentally protect, you know, all the interests of anti-fouling paints, and they're not going to have that opportunity to do that. And so, and this site is, quote, EPA approved dump site. So if you want to, and you want to go down and throw some flowers out at it and wish it happy sailing and what have you, you can go down there to Kaimana Beach and probably catch it. But so it remains, what is the actual damage? It remains the question of how do we, who pays for this one? If the boat owner or the company owner that owns it has other boats, do we seize the other boats and make him use every penny that he has to address these issues? Or are we just going to stop at, we being the government, going to stop at asking him to, the insurance company, to pay the coverage of $400,000, I thought, initially? Or is he going to be responsible for the entire amount? But there is another boat in the system called the Pacific Dragon, and which was formerly known as the Elizabeth, which caught fire early in of this year in April. So in my thinking, that boat should be seized as well by the government and forfeited and sold to recover some of the monies. And I don't know if they can, and this is creative punishment, I guess. Or and so what you do is you seize the boat, and with the boat comes a longline fishing license that's worth a pretty good chunk of change, or you file attach a lien to the company's boat for the damages and for each ton of fish that he brings in, continue to tax him or take a portion of that sales of the fish until he pays and compensate the public for the losses and the damages. So this is the creative in structuring some creative punishment. But it would be a shame to allow him to operate openly another boat, and we take the brunt of the blow of the environmental concerns and also having spent so much time and money and effort. We would never know. I mean, if picture this, if the declaration is that they had exhausted the $400,000 that on the efforts of trying to remove it, that but then learning that it was reported that only $400,000 was allotted, was available for the insurance. So when does the public step in, and when do we determine how much dollar amounts did we, as in the resources with the United States Coast Guard, with the Department of Land and Natural Resources and its personnel being paid overtime or being paid to monitor that, to do these things, and all of that, and the health department's role in it and assigning people there, how are we going to get that money back? So I'm thinking it would be a slap in the face to the general public or the taxpayers to just say, well, he didn't have but X number of dollars in, to cover an insurance, if that's the case. So the public is going to have to eat it. No, again, I submit that if we are going to do that, we should think about it or go to the courts and ask. I don't know the legal ramification or the course that you would take, but I would hate like hell to know that here is a person that has caused these damages and caused this much of trouble and cost to the government or to the taxpayers and still get to operate with a boat that goes out fishing and, you know, and come back and sell its fish and have with these impacts. I think the onus is, should be placed on the owner of that vessel and the company that owned it, and if it puts them out of business, so be it. Someone will come along and buy that and buy the license, but from the sale of that, or whatever constructive, we won't call it sentencing because he didn't get arrested or anything. But wouldn't it be a shame to we get slapped in the face with a cost that we can't recover or no one make an effort to recover, but yet that company is able to operate another boat and go unscathed as far as the cost. Now, are they related? I don't know. If you're an attorney and you have an insight or input or a suggestion or tell me what can be done, can't be done, I'd be interested in hearing it because I don't know if you can attach, but I would think that maybe deny them the right to park their boat at the pier. And maybe there could be a justification because it goes unexplained on Pier 38 or 39, the Elizabeth caught fire while it was waiting to offload its fish and burn. And strange enough, they went back and refurbished it and changed the name and gave it a new paint job and took it, you know, to... So it would be shameful if this the public end up eating the cost on this when there's this beautiful boat, especially with this nice new paint job on it. And it won't hurt the fishing industry. In fact, I'm sure there'll be a celebration that there's a permit available, a longline fishing permit available for sale or for auction or whatever the avenue that the state should try and attach something to it. Again, are they separate entities? I think it was the same company, 2L. And if that's the case, might be some legal angle to be recovered, but it would be shameful. And if nothing else, if he's going to walk, or they, the owners of that company, is going to walk without any cost other than the insurance that they had, maybe there should be a special fund or an attachment or a lien to his offloading of fish for the next 10 years or whatever, to put in a fund to offset the cost for the maintenance and restoration and monitoring and management of that coral reef that was impacted, or to have monitoring paid for by our studies to see that we can learn from this. And then there's the hooks that we spoke about way back when everybody else was off the hook. There's some thousands of hooks, as I told you, in the early stages of this grounding. They went overboard. So the removal of those hooks also poses a threat, or the presence of the hooks, I should say, poses a threat. And as I've described way back, is that the hooks will wash. They may be impale a turtle or a swimmer or snorkelers. Or it is iron or stainless steel. And so what does that do with the those hooks washing back and forth, and if there are any attached to this 400-pound leader or more, this is a monofilament leader with a lead weight, so that will continue to lay there for eons and slap the coral and break and chip. So may not sound like a big problem, but then the possible entanglement by turtles coming in that area. These leaders can be 3 feet, possibly pretty long, but in a situation where if it's snagged a turtle or wrapped around the flipper of a turtle or shell or the hook, and the lead gets wedged down, you drown. And I don't even want to talk about the monk seal that frequents that area and hauls out on that beach almost on a weekly basis, at least 1 or 2 days out of the week. There's a presence of a monk seal there on average. I know. You can call me up and tell me, no, it only comes once a month, but it's okay to just, you would be confirming that there's an endangered marine mammal that we should be concerned with. So anyway, that's the difficulty in this. It's go to carolcox.com, and if you're just interested in looking at some of the pictures, a few pictures that we put up, and they may be able to move it, but my suspicions is the way things are going, it won't be out of here for another week. But I could be wrong. There's a tendency for me to say things that really just based on what I'm drawing conclusion on past tense and what have you. But it's rare that I've been wrong on these instances. And even if I'm right or wrong, I would be happy that they did take it out, get it out of here. So it's one of the things. I don't care if I'm right or wrong. Just do something. And that's the problem, you know. Well, you know, as we talked about it on air here, the state parks at Sand Island. Now, I know that it's probably at some points you can draw the conclusion that I'm just absolutely nuts I have this stick-to-it mentality that once something is wrong and it's egregious or offensive as it is when it comes to government behaving in an offensive way, you just can't talk about it and then walk away, or, you know, you become a grumpy old man, or you're just itchy-bitchy, you know, whatever you want to call yourself. You have to stand back and ask the question. Now, the initial conversation is started by this one, at least this conversation, in the vein of cats and the willingness and the desire of Suzanne Case, the chairperson of the Department of Land and Natural Resources. It's her baby. It's her ownership. It's David Ige, the governor, who appointed her. This is their baby, whether they like it or not, and whether they like what we say, it's their baby. So she wants to kill everything that's furry and that doesn't look like herself or whatever. I don't know. If it had eyes and lips and put makeup on, she probably wouldn't want to kill it. But if it's got a tail and furry and got claws and run around in the wild and eat, she's going to kill it. Okay, and I know that's so you have this aggressive approach to killing it all, and so you go and you introduce a bill or legislation or administrative rule, and you amend it. You have your guys that feed out of her hand at the, we'll call the Board of Land and Natural Resources, you know, the puppets or the Muppets, whatever you call them. And whatever it is that she wants, they give it to her. You know, for example, the sea cucumber, like I explained to you, that was a big lie that they perpetrated that, you know, we don't have any commercial. And we made this big case, and this big case shows that they were taking thousands of sea cucumbers, and we don't have no commercial activity of that, when it was a lie, as we demonstrated to you, showed you the even the licenses that were sold in the annual reports that was gotten and received from the fishermen who took sea cucumbers and reported to the state. But, you know, Suzanne Case wants to build this community-based fishery system, so therefore create a lie, subterfuge, present it to the public, put officers on the plane, bring them over here early morning, stage a phony press conference that they've got this undercover action and activities, when in fact the officers on this island knew exactly where the sea cucumbers were stored and processed and all. She didn't ask that because that wouldn't have looked as sexy, wouldn't have helped them perpetrate this big lie. So having said that, they went and had the administrative rules. Now, this isn't about some person that's going nuts about cats and that can fall in the category of just being insane. Cats are, in their presence in the wild poses a risk to native species. That's a reality. That's a fact. When you ask the state, well, what can you do in between? You wait until you lie and steal and cheat and finagle this so-called rule-making process. You manipulate that and you offend the people, no transparency. The governor, to my knowledge, has yet to file or sign that or reject it, that approved board meeting. Now, if it has, it hadn't been publicly told. So, but this new administrative ruling is that they can kill cats in any way they can. So now, you have people that are feeding cats and trapping and neutering. And again, I know this is repetitive, and I know you can always turn the dial, and it, I won't be offended. In fact, I won't even know you did it. But those of you that do care about this subject, and it has implications in other areas, and I'll get to those. So now there, you go down and you feed, and so someone, I told you, complained that the food bowls were a problem, were unsightly, and they could collect water, and the mosquitoes could build up in there. And you see, when you're that simple-minded, well, first of all, if a person is feeding every day or every other day, that's because the water evaporates. The cats drink the water that they put out there, and they have to replenish it. So there is no potential for mosquitoes to congregate and breed in these water bowls. That's point one. Point two, the guy that filed the complaint goes out, and there's another one that complains also. And you go out there, and this is about human health and dignity and offensive behavior to other park goers that you want to avoid. And just the other day, I got pictures of a gentleman standing there as naked as a jaybird. Now, unfortunately, I can also tell you that in that same day, and that same was people with their younger children going out fishing, and they had to see this. And not to mention all the other things. So this is important, and I tell you this, and it's repetitive, and I've said it before, some of it. But this is about, if you take it from the point of Suzanne Case, the issue is public health and welfare. And the right to enjoy a clean visit to the outdoors. So that's why she wants to get rid of the cats, and they eat birds, and all of that. But the reality is, how are the cats getting there? She won't address that. Let's make a penalty, a harsh penalty, for anybody that is willing to dump an animal into the wild, abandon an animal, introduce a wild animal, a domestic animal, to the wild, period. That will take a portion of the problem, because I know factually about 61 cats at Sand Island were neutered this year that were dumped. And yet, Suzanne Case, her whole interest is to kill him. So what about in the interim, trapping and taking and managing through trapping and humanely taking these animals? Don't they, but it's cheaper and more evil and more enjoyable and pleasurable to go out and attack the people that feed the cats and recruit and assign your officers to go out and harass. See, if you go over there, and I'll get to this later, this is, it's an annoyance. And, you know, we reported 2 weeks ago that there was trash there, mosquitoes, roaches, flies, 8-foot-tall hole, deep hole with 75 feet by 30, with trash and tires, with humongous tires, with water and mosquitoes growing. And if I told you that we filed a complaint, and we did, and I will tell you also that that trash is still there. Nothing has moved. Now, that causes me a little trauma because I thought removing the cats was about mosquitoes, flies, bugs, and rodents, and the safety of the park visitors and the cleanliness of the park. So how the hell can you leave two piles of trash that's illegally dumped, an open dump, in a park after you receive a complaint and don't make an effort to clean it up? But yet you're sending your, I understand the chief of the Department of Land and Natural Resources, which is still trying to confirm this, comes out now in a way to inquire about how many cats are in the park. Well, I submit this. If you're going to do that, now there's no signs, if you look in the park, there's not a sign that says do not feed the cats. It says no animals. But now, what you will see is a sign that say no smoking. Understand now. And this is critical. This is when you know your government becomes a human being and becomes mean-spirited and not guided by good governance or good rules or good purposely placed rules. It becomes a sick reaction to something that only you know why you're that sick and willing to shoot things and kill things just because you find it to be offensive. I find cats to be out of place too in the wild. But you got to be realistic about it, and you got to be humane about it, and you got to, if you're going to fix it, you can't just sit there and bitch about someone feeding the cats that come get dumped out. And I'm not advocating for the cats. I'm advocating for common sense, common decency, and humane approach to something that you declare as a problem. So you take this situation, and it brings me this to this meeting called the polarization that we talked about. That's why I wanted to hold off next week until I prepare for it and talk about it, because this situation fits right into that discussion. So you take this and you go over to the park and Sand Island Park, and you go there. And you won't see a sign that say no feeding of cats, and you'll see that they went to make a change in the rules and what have you to get it done and done right or whatever, so that they can kill them, shoot them in the head, drown them, do whatever. This is what Suzanne Case wants to do. She wants to kill them. Okay. So no signs say no feeding the cats, no feeding of animals. It just says no animals. Okay, well, if animals are escaping and people are dumping them, you would think the park, Suzanne Case would have her army, and I guess this is, I'm told it was Robert Farrell, I guess, and I haven't confirmed this, but two officers from DLNR went out there to the park and to harass. And having been in law enforcement, I've witnessed it, how your mere presence caused some people to be threatened, especially if you come off in a way, if you found yourself mentioned in a letter that someone complained, some pervert complains that while going to the beach to the nude sunbathe or whatever you do out there, was offended by the sight of cat food, and so take it upon themselves to throw it away. And so the DLNR gets involved with their officers. So here's the trick about this. Now, no signs of anything that says no feeding, no rules. In fact, the manager of the park at Sand Island have prescribed certain places 2 feet. So having no problem with that, at least he has a heart. But there is a sign that say no smoking, the use of tobacco. And I wasn't aware of this, folks, because I don't do tobacco or any green grubs that change my pleasures, or to nurture my pleasures. The use of tobacco products, including e-cigarettes and all other smoking devices, is prohibited by law, HRS 184. Now imagine, there is this law that is posted on the entrance of the building. Now that's critical. The use of smoking devices is prohibited by law. Even e-cigarettes is prohibited. Hawaii Revised Statute 184. Now, human health, the welfare of the environment, flies, roaches, rodents, and what have you, is something we don't welcome here. And also, they don't welcome tobacco and no smoking. Now, how is it that the very people that are chasing the damn cats around and chasing the people to feeding cats and trying, at least having a heart and demonstrating some humanitarian gesture, and you're standing there telling them, I got a complaint about you, and you're smoking a cigarette, and you're the part of the workforce of that place. You're even the manager. And you're puffing and huffing on the cigarette. Who goes in and arrests them? See, this is when government becomes an annoyance, because it takes on a personal tone to get their agenda in, and the individuals in the agenda are pushing their agenda or having an agenda, when there are signs, clearly written rules that say, and you'll find a cigarette butt anywhere you go on that property, and people openly smoke. But guess what? You don't see and you won't find anyone having been cited in that park for smoking, not even the manager, not even the person who pulls up to you and say, here's a letter. Says here that you are feeding cats. And so we're going to have to somehow, you know. Now, Robert Farrell is a top honcho at DLNR. Now, if it's him to come out there, you know, you walk around and you're the man, and you're out there now projecting on people and threatening people with your presence. You're the head guy. There are so many things that are broken at DLNR that I don't even want to start mentioning them. But you got time to just go out and ask questions and drive by a sign that people are smoking. And maybe you would have asked the person or the little lady that you were trying to flex your muscles and threaten with your presence, hey, can you tell me where the illegal dump sites are that the park dumped and where the trash is? So, how then is it that Suzanne Case can drum up the band and play this god-awful music about kill, 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 and yet we're going to do this killing because it's bad for people and it's not healthy for people, but there's a sign that's, and there's nothing that says you can't feed in the park, nothing, and you don't see the state trapping anything or removing, or promising to work with the, but no, they're going to turn it into a criminal endeavor, cops and robbers. In the meantime, this big sign that we've spent taxpayers' dollars says no smoking. And you see the manager smoking, puffing on the cigarette while he working on the property. Who gives them a ticket? I mean, you're going to shoot the cats in the head and kill them because They're bad for the environment and bad for the, you say, bad for human health. And so if that's the case, cigarette smoking, now I've heard there's no level that is safe with cigarettes, secondhand cigarette smoke. How about that? And there's no levels or anything that say, well, cigarette butts don't provide a problem to the environment. All the chemicals in the cigarette filters and what have you, and the cigarette tobacco. And yet, so when people in government can fragment and just be so obvious about it, and I'm not overreacting, folks. I'm just saying if you're motivated because there's an illegal activity occurring, or you're motivated to implement law and rules based on the interests of protecting the public, and you have something that Hawaii Revised Statutes that says no smoking, period, not even e-cigarettes, period, or even tobacco products or the products or the tools that you use to smoke, the devices that use the smoke. That's pretty substantial. And not one damn citation and not one arrest. The manager should be fired immediately for smoking on a daily basis 10, 20, 30 cigarettes at a time. Or you go back there where the perverts hang out at and that complain about dumping, and you'll find cigarettes, condoms, and everything else. So this is when your government goes nuts. That was a bad term there, but when your government just overreacts or underreacts or become actors and focusing on the cats. And this isn't, I'm not offering this to defend the cats, folks. Honestly, I'm not. I'm saying that the Department of Land and Natural Resources under the David Ige administration is the sickest agency there is. They're untouchable. They lend themselves to, we found amongst them rapists. We found amongst them criminals. We're found amongst them people who now want to flex their muscles and see only the laws that they see. They're myopic. They want to prove their point, not protect the interests of the public. And, you know, to be able to leave an illegal dump site open, untouched, even after it's raised to you on the TV, on the news, in the evening news, in the dinner room times, at times of dinner, you see it, and it's on the Facebooks, it's everywhere. But you don't have time to touch that. But someone with cat food in the car, oh, you have time to get out of the car and walk over and conduct an interview. I think that if I'm not mistaken, that you are going in and harassing people because as you drive by cars that are smoking. I was standing there and watching two state vehicles drive out of the park. And you've seen this image where there's e-cigarettes, the vaping, and there's just clouds of it coming out of the passenger or driver's side of the truck or the vehicle. So am I overreacting? No. I'm simply drawing parallels to simply say there's something wrong when you have, and I know how we got there. When you hire and appoint people with their own agenda, as sick as they are and as dishonest as they are, and they've got their eye on the prize of public interest, there's public money. So they want to be in the mix of things so that they can control these things. And in doing so, how do you get the DLNR to behave this way? Well, let's give a little background. And that background is this. The backdrop is this. Remember we told you about the helicopter and the officers using, and it was Randy Awo and his relatives, and using a helicopter that was used officially to eradicate drugs on the island of Maui, and then in turn this effort was some of it was the energies and the monies and the flight time was diverted to collect fish and freshwater fish and oopu and whatever it was that they were gathering from the streams without permits. Well, you can't do it anyway. You can't, you didn't file, but they use the services of the helicopter contract. Suzanne Case, when she first come in, I got to tell you this. This is why I believe that when you're just simply as a, you're just motivated by your agenda, it reflects something different. You're a different species. And that is, you're hell-bent on getting what you want from the public. And you do that. So when she came into office, just within a couple of days, I tried to set up a meeting to share with her some of the more egregious behaviors that we had documented in the state system in DLNR, the DOCARE. She didn't want to meet with me. She said, well, we can talk over the phone. So I laid out these violations. This was 3 years ago about the helicopter. So being so sly, what was the response now? Well, we won't do anything about that because it was old. It was an incident that took place 3 years ago or 4 years ago. Well, wait, I told you about this Suzanne Case and hoped that you would do something, and you never did anything. And when the push come to shove, we force the issue. Then you declare that it's so long ago you won't react on it. It's so long ago that the ethics, it had fallen, gone past the ethics laws. That's dishonesty. That's deceitfulness. And then when you manufacture a story about the sea cucumbers, and I've documented all of this, and you lie about it, and you present this press conference, and you bring officers, you spend taxpayers' money to bring officers here, when you already have a manager who is a fully aware and has the hands-on, the knowledge of the facility, the activity, and has declared that it's not illegal, so therefore he's not going to get involved, but you bring your officers over here, present yourselves as undercover, go rent a car, a plane car, to trail the sea cucumber shipper, and you have the box delayed for a day or so to accommodate you to get here, your officer to get here, so that they could, quote, follow him in a surreptitious way. If you got to orchestrate situations like that, then I'm going to say you're dishonest. And then I'm going to say nothing about your policies or nothing that you do is for the benefit of the people other than yourself and your cronies. If you have the time to assign your men to go and chase around a lady or a citizen who's putting down food for animals that have been dumped and who is trapping animals at their own expense and having them neutered to prevent the growth and the expansion or the spread of populations of cats, and you can't even bring yourself to say good morning to them, you demonize them, you criminalize them, and you marginalize them, and you harass them by assigning your men to go behind her and pick up every food bowl. That's a mental illness. You're full of yourself. You just got too much of yourself involved in yourself. You're doing it for selfish reasons. Because if it was for the sake and health of the environment, as I've explained, and the health of the people, then you would not have hired the individuals that work there who smoke, because they need their fix. And you can't be working 8 hours a day and don't get your fix, baby. You need your fix. And that fix comes in e-cigarettes. That fix comes in tobacco cigarettes. And that fix comes in, I smoke them while I'm on property that has signs admonishing and warning that there it is illegal on the Hawaii Revised Statute 184, that it is illegal. But I'm the man, see. And I got the woman behind me who, all as long as I carry out her wishes, and as long as I can get out of the truck and strut my stuff when, like I got guns on and intimidate little old ladies, I'm going to get my accolades. And that's what this has come to. Meanwhile, a boat sits on the rocks, on the reef, outside of our Waikiki, the jewel of the Pacific, the money maker, the playmakers, all of that. You can't handle that. And you're out there, and I got to tell you, there should be a lockdown. The gates should be closed. There shouldn't be a single person allowed to smoke a cigarette because cigarettes are dangerous. Tobacco products are dangerous. That's not my opinion. It's already been stated. People have been compensated for the damages and all associated with smoking and what have you, and the secondhand smoke. And the state, Department of Land and Natural Resources, and the legislators, there is a law, 184, Hawaii Revised Statute. But there is no law that says posted out there telling people that can't feed cats. No notices to the public. So what you do, you operate in a sleazy southern fashion. You the man. So you being the man, you got the power. You got the power. You the man. You the power broker. You can do what you wish. You can break the law even while handing the letter to the person that's not written to them smoking cigarettes on state park property. Now, some people are above the law. I haven't met one yet, but they tell me that there are some people think they're above the law. I haven't met one that, because ultimately, if in a healthy society, no one is above the law. And it makes a mockery of a law or non-existing law or proposed laws or the need for laws when you have laws in place and you don't enforce them and you go out and create laws on your own that's unwritten, have not been passed or codified or revised or anything, not even on the book, and you take upon yourself to become law enforcers. But yet the real laws that says you can't illegally dump, you can't illegally create open dumps, you can't walk around in public naked, you can't do this, and you go unscathed. Isn't that funny? So it brings me to my reminder that, as a gentleman says, well, you seem to have Suzanne Case. No, Suzanne Case is in a capacity that she can harm people. She can harm taxpayers. She can divert monies. She can misspend monies. She can assign lower priorities to issues of the environment and what have you, in which this is what she's doing. Thank you, Carla. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Hey, Carol.
Yes.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to say about the cat issue with the DLNR, how the pathetic, horrible thing about what they want to do with killing the already sick cats and stopping feeding is they know where there are breeding cats at the harbor, and they are not going out, and or if they do go out, they're not, you know, significantly going out and doing anything about the breeding cats. And they, everyone else can do this, but they have convinced the higher ups that they have to do this, and not really any reason why they can't go and take those cats, and they can see that they are not notched, and the notched cats they claim get in the way because they have to bring the cats that are fit. Instead of just re-releasing those fixed cats with the notch and take in the cats to the Humane Society like they're supposed to, because even if they don't have a notch, maybe they're not a breeding cat. Maybe somebody dumped that cat and some little kid wants their cat back. Mm-hmm. And that is just so unfair. That they're not doing that. They're wanting to kill all the cats that the people have fixed, doing the right thing. And and then they complain that all the things that they complain about, you know, like the health hazards or, you know, the wildlife hazards, the fixed cats are doing more good than harm in all those arenas. I went down to the Kehi Lagoon where they claim there was an extra 50 cats born every month. And I put it on YouTube. I put it under Save Hawaiian Harbor Cats. And I showed where there's no anything that they said that that there's no cats all over the place. I found a small amount of cats in little pockets that are fixed that are not doing any harm, and those are the ones that will get harmed, not the breeding cats that they could be doing something about right now.
Well,
so I'm really, you know, unbelievably unfair type of thing going on, and you know, these people who are doing something about the cat population, doing something about, you know, the issues and making sure that those cats are fixed, and then they have to feed them after they're fixed. That's what you gotta do. You feed them after you fix them, and then, you know, their chances of getting a bird are minimal to none where they are at the harbor. There's no, they don't let them where there's birds that's going to be, you know, endangered, because the colonies are not at those places. They're in back by guard shacks, and they're in back where they can kill the rats. And then the whole toxoplasmosis issue goes down the drain, because those fixed cats are not likely to spread toxoplasmosis. They only do that once, and after that, they are a buffer. They're blaming all these things on the cats to get people against cats, but the fixed cats do way more good than harm. And instead of just releasing the notched cats, that's all they have to do, release the notched cat.
But the intention...
They can do something about the issue.
The intention
of
breeding
cats.
When we say putting cats back in the wild, with the specific intent is to reduce the presence of cats through this attrition, this process of trapping, neuter, returning, and preventing reintroducing or new introductions. And I'm by no means going to advocate for continuing to replenish cats, you know, but those that are present, make an aggressive effort and quit complaining about what the public is doing. And the government should do something, adopt something, and treat this as if these are rational people rather than evil people that are out trapping, neutering, and returning. That's where the problem is. They don't want to engage in, they being Suzanne Case, and she's hell-bent. I mean... I'm so concerned now when I look at Lehua Island. When anybody tell me about eradicating anything now, coming from the Department of Land and Natural Resources, I become a little nervous, because we can't trust anything that she says. Pilot whales don't just drive themselves on the beach, and when you just in the same time had pausing, massive pausing, and on an island that to protect the rats and. So could they have that wrong? Could they have the cat issue wrong? Yes. Could they have, because I don't believe their ethics is the right place. So cats...
They're going to do way more harm than good. It's just going to, it's going to make it crazy about the suffering that's going to happen. People aren't going to go back there and fix the cats. And there's going to be...
Exactly.
Horrible amount of suffering, of kittens dying, and then there'll be a breed, like in Australia, a new breed that lives when they go up in the mountains, and then there'll be a danger, because then they'll be living off the land. And they are, you know, a new breed that you can't trap, you're not going to be able to, they're going to hear you coming, you're not going to be able to shoot them, and... if that's what they want to do, if they want the worst-case scenario, that's, you know, that's crazy that, yeah, you know, they think that they're all they have to do is not take in a cat that's notched and be respectful to people who have those cats as a way to reduce the population. They weren't, yeah, there trapping the cat.
Right.
The people who trapped the cat are now going to feed it. If they were there trapping the cat would be at the Humane Society.
Yep.
They weren't.
Yep.
If they want to go and trap the breeding cat, that's what they need to do.
Yeah.
They know where the breeding cats are, and then they whine because they caught a cat that was notched, and they're easy pickings, and they take them to the Humane Society. All they have to do is release them.
Yeah.
And go after the breeding cat, one without a notch.
Well, we're down to the last second here.
Belong to someone.
Yeah, we're down to the last seconds, Jill. So.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
But
thank you for letting me.
Next week we'll talk about this and then the polarization.
It's very disturbing.
Okay.
Well,
thank you. All right. Aloha. Bye bye. Okay, we're gonna get out of here. Thank you for listening to the Carol Cox Show here at KWAI 1080 AM. So go to carolcox.com and you can pick up the podcast or Carol Cox Facebook. But if you're out there at Sand Island Park, make sure you don't get caught smoking a cigarette. But even worse, if you get caught feeding a cat, you better watch out. The chief of the police in the Department of Fish and Game is going to arrest you, might shoot you in the head, so be careful, guys. And we'll bring back next week some more information. So take care. Aloha. To have to separate this way. We've
been together so long. To have to separate. This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.